This is Dr. David Mathewson in his teaching on New Testament Greek, third semester. This is session number 8, Verbal Aspect.
So we want to move on now to linger a little bit more on the individual aspects, talk a little bit about their meaning and how they function, maybe give a couple of illustrations of how they work. But we'll start first with the aorist tense form. And as we said, the aorist tense form, as far as its meaning, basically looks at the action as a complete whole. It's kind of the external perspective. It stands outside. The action sees it in its entirety. It doesn't comment on how long the action took place. It doesn't comment on whether the action will take place again, whether it is finished and done with, whether it is instantaneous or repeated. All that information, if it's present, comes from the context. All that the aorist tense does is say, it happened, or it happens. And that's the other thing. The aorist tense doesn't primarily indicate time. It's often used of past time, particularly in narrative. It's kind of the standard narrative tense that just narrates past time events. And you often see it in Paul's letters of referring to past events. But we're going to see it can also be used of other time, temporal context. The aorist tense can refer to future time. It can refer to present time. It can refer to action that is not limited by time, that is all something that is always true. Just making statements that are always true, not necessarily past. So the time, past, present, or future, again, that information comes from the context. All that the choice of the aorist tense by the author says is the author wants to view the action as a complete whole. The other thing to say about the aorist tense is the aorist tense can usually be seen as sort of the default tense. That is, it's just the normal tense to use unless the author wants to be more specific. I like to compare it sometimes to my computer. When I turn my computer on and go into my Word program and begin a document, it comes up 11 font. That just is my default font. And unless I want to be more specific, if I don't want to get smaller or get bigger or choose bold or italics, then I have to make that choice. Otherwise, the default font on my computer is just 11, size 11 font. The aorist can kind of be seen as the default tense form. That is the normal tense form the author will use unless he wants to be more specific and choose another tense form. So the aorist tense form can be seen as communicating perfective action or perfective aspect, I'm sorry. That's just a way of saying the action is viewed as a complete whole. It's looked at in its entirety, kind of the summary tense, irrespective of how the action actually took place. One interesting example, the aorist tense, you can find all kinds of examples. Pick up any of the Gospels and you'll see plenty of examples of the aorist tense form used of action that takes place in the past. Because by definition, narrative is narrating past time events. But an interesting example of the aorist tense, a couple interesting examples of how the aorist tense is used of different kinds of actions, temporally, but also kind of action. One interesting example is found in Mark chapter 1, and this is in Mark's version of the baptism of Jesus. Let's see if I can find it here. Mark chapter 1, verse 11. And this is in Mark's version of Jesus' baptism at the beginning of his ministry. And verse 11 says, "A voice came from heaven, 'You are my son, my beloved son. In you I am pleased.'" One thing you'll notice is the attributive adjective construction to kind of review a previous lesson. Ha huios, ha agapetos, article, noun, article, adjective, my or beloved son. But then verse 11 ends, in you I am well pleased. And the verb is eudokesa. This is the aorist tense form. Notice that sa, aorist ending. But notice how I translated it. In you, this is God, the voice of God, the voice from heaven, speaking about the Son, speaking to the Son. You are my beloved Son. In you I am pleased, or I am well pleased. Notice how I translated that as a present. This is a good example of the aorist tense that does not refer to a past act. In fact, I've seen some commentaries scramble to find something in the past that this is referring to, like the baptism or some other event in Jesus' life that this must refer to. No, it's referring to God's pleasure with Jesus at the moment he's speaking. So this is a good example of a present use, maybe even what could be called an atemporal use. It's not limited any time. God is always pleased. He's just making a statement of his pleasure with the Son that is not limited to any time. And furthermore, this is certainly not a instantaneous act referring to an act of short duration. This is always true. It indicates God's pleasure with the Son. So again, the context, I think, indicates that this is an example of an aorist that is not past in time, nor does it refer to an instantaneous or action that is only of short duration. Notions that are frequently confused with the aorist tense. Another interesting example, the aorist tense form that I like to point to, is found in the last book of the Bible and Revelation chapter 20. The famous millennium passage. And I'm not going to get into different views of the millennium and which one I hold and whether you're amill or pre-mill or post-mill or whatever mill. But what I want to draw your attention to in chapter 20 and verses 4 through 6, we find the famous millennium passage. And at the end of verse 4, John sees the martyrs, those that have been beheaded for their faith because they refuse to take the mark of the beast. And it says, and they came to life at Zason, and they reigned with Christ. The verb that I want to focus on in Revelation 20, this is 20 and verse 4. Revelation 20, verse 4. It's at El Basileuson. This is the aorist tense of basileuo, I reign, I rule. So the saints came to life and they reigned with Christ. And it's modified by a temporal designation, 1,000 years. So however metaphorically or symbolically you take this, you have an aorist tense covering a period of 1,000 years, at least at the visionary level that John saw. So clearly, this is not referring to a period of short duration or instantaneous. It's referring, at least at the visionary level, to a period of 1,000 years. But all the aorist tense does is just summarize it. It looks at the period of 1,000 years as a complete whole. And if you think that this is a reference to a future event, it's not referring to past time either. It's technically referring to the future. Although, again, you could still hold this as past in that John is describing what he saw, which is past. But in any case, what I want to point out is here we have an example in Mark 1:11 of an aorist tense used of all times. It's not limited to any time. God is always pleased with his Son. And then you have an example of an aorist tense used of a act an activity of rather long duration, reigning for 1,000 years. However, symbolically you take that, at a visionary level and at a textual level, the aorist tense covers a period of 1,000 years. But in both cases, the aorist tense is performing its normal function of simply looking at an action as a complete whole. And the context tells us, if at all, will tell us how long the action takes place, whether it's past, present, or future, and other information like that. And as we said, as more the default tense, the aorist tense tends to indicate more background information. The next aspect that we'll talk about briefly is the present tense form. And the present tense form indicates imperfective aspect. That is, the action is viewed as developing or unfolding. Again, it's as if the author sees the action as it develops and unfolds. And again, if it helps to use my colleague's image of a snow globe, where you're inside the snow globe seeing it snow, or the image of a parade where you're standing on the street corner watching it go by and watching it develop and unfold, that is the perspective or the aspect or the perspective communicated by the present tense form. The present tense form, especially in epistolary literature like Paul's letters, tends to indicate, main theme information that is on the main theme line or is kind of the main focus of attention. It can be used to indicate action that is taking place in the present. The idea of describing an action as it develops and unfolds fits very naturally in describing present time action. But in Paul's letters, it often is action on the main theme line. In narrative, it's often used to indicate prominent or foreground information. That is, action, especially against the aorist tense and the imperfect tense, the present tense will be used of action to signify action that kind of sticks out. It's a peak. It sticks out in the discourse. There's more emphasis on it. It's more prominent. Grammars often call this the historical present something like that. That's fine as long as you realize what it's doing. You often see it described as it's just the author places you at the present time of the action. I'm not sure that seems to depend more on a temporal view of the present tense, that it has to communicate present time. But what that doesn't make sense of is sometimes the very next verb is aorist. So does the author want you to keep, yo-yoing back and forth and shifting back and forth between present and past tense view of the action? It seems better to say, no, the present tense form is used to foreground certain events within a narrative discourse. For example, in the very first book of the New Testament, the Gospel of Matthew and the account of Jesus' birth, we find in verse 13, for example. Verse 13, and when they had departed, behold, referring to the Magi who came to visit Jesus, now they're warned in a dream to not go back to Herod and to go to their own country. So when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared according to a dream to Joseph. The verb is phainetai. Appeared. It's present tense. Most of the surrounding verbs are aorist. The very next verb, most of the next verbs are aorist tense forms. That's the common tense form used in narrative just to carry the story along. But now you find a present tense, finitai. What's going on? It's still describing a past act, the angel that appeared to the Magi or to Joseph, but the present tense serves to draw attention to this action. It draws attention to the introduction of the angel and the next scene that's going to take place. So it serves to establish prominence and to draw attention to something. Not so much the appearance, but to the what's going to happen, the next scene that's going to take place. So that's, again, grammars would call that a historical present. But the main point is especially in the context of aorist tense forms and imperfect tenses, the present tense can be used to signal a prominent event in narrative. So that's the present tense. The next tense form that I want to note is the imperfect. The imperfect tense form, and like the present tense, we've already said, it indicates imperfective action, but you know, what distinguishes it from the present tense if they have the same aspect? The action is looked at as ongoing or unfolding, developing. What distinguishes it is the added feature of remote or remoteness. That is, the action is seen as slightly, from the author's perspective, it's slightly more remote. The author is slightly more removed from it. And it because of the idea of remoteness, it is a suitable tense for describing past acts, past activities. And you often see it used that way. So you can find all kinds of examples of the imperfect tense form used of past time, especially in narrative. In narrative, it seems to sketch in or fill out background and supporting information, and that's a lot of that's probably due to the remote idea that's communicated in the imperfect tense form. You find examples of the imperfect tense used in a couple of different ways in the book of Galatians, for example. In Galatians chapter 1 and 2, we actually find a brief narrative in Galatians 1 and 2 of Paul's former life as a Jew, a devout Jew, leading up to his conversion. And for example, we find verse 13, for you heard of my former life in Judaism, how I was persecuting. Imperfect tense form, how I was persecuting the church of God. And I was attempting to destroy it. So two imperfect tense forms describing Paul's former lifestyle in attempting to snuff out or destroy the Church of Jesus Christ. So it often is used, the imperfect tense form is often used of past time action. However, the imperfect tense form sometimes can be used of action that is not past in time. So for example, one example of the imperfect tense form used of action that is not past is found in Romans chapter 9 and verse 3. And Paul says, I could wish to be accursed. This is eukamein. This is an imperfect tense form, and most English translations will translate it, I could wish. So it's not, I was wishing in the past, it's referring to a present wish. And often, this is a use of the imperfect tense form that most grammars recognize, used in kind of excluded wishes. I could wish. So Paul's expressing a present wish with the imperfect tense. So an example of the imperfect tense not used of past time. Which is one of the reasons we say that the primary thing communicated by Greek verb tenses is not time, but verbal aspect. And so the imperfect tense action looked at as a complete, as developing and unfolding along with the remoteness could lend itself to be used of a wish that expresses the author's wish at the present time. In this case, an excluded one. So you translate, I could wish. The next tense form or aspect to discuss briefly is the perfect tense form. And the perfect tense form communicates stative aspect, that is, the action is viewed as an existing state, or the subject of the action is viewed as in the state of performing the action. So, again, a good example is found in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. We'll look at a specific verse in just a moment, but several times Paul refers to Jesus' resurrection with the perfect tense. Jesus was raised, and the idea is Jesus is in the state of being raised. But once again, the perfect tense form does not tell us when this took place. Was it past, present, or a future state? The context has to tell us that. Obviously, when it's used of Jesus, it's usually past because Jesus was raised in the past, even from the standpoint of the writing of the New Testament. So it's a past event, but in the past, Jesus was in the state of being raised. Or the Greek verb oida, I am in the state of knowing, or egnokon, from the perfect of gnosko, I am in the state, they were in the state of knowing. So looking at the action as a state, an existing state, is the way to look at the perfect tense form. The pluperfect tense, I'm not going to give examples or spend a lot of time because it's dying out by the time of the New Testament. It's not real common. But the pluperfect tense would be the same. It's stative. It indicates state of aspect, but it also, like the imperfect tense, it adds the feature of remoteness. And therefore, it's usually limited to past time context in the New Testament. Let's go back to the 1 Corinthians 15 passage to know how it works, the way that the perfect tense functions. And the perfect tense form frequently can be used to draw attention to an activity, to lend prominence, to foreground something, to make it prominent, to make it stick out in the discourse. In fact, in narrative, it's very rare. And in narrative, it tends to, I think it particularly tends to function that way. But in 1 Corinthians 15, in the famous resurrection passage, notice what Paul says in verse 3. For I pass on to you of what is of first importance, which also they passed on to me, that Christ died. And so we're dealing with verse 3. And what was passed on to Paul that he now passes on is that Christ died. Apothanen. For our sins, according to the scriptures. And we're going to get into verse 4 as well. And that he was buried. etaphe, aorist tense, and that he rose on the third day. Egegertai. And then a handful of times, then Paul will repeat the aorist ophthe. He was seen. And he was seen by Cephas, and he was seen by so-and-so. Notice that all of these are aorist tense forms except for egegertai. He was raised. And so what you should do is sit up and ask, well, why is that the case? And the kind of the standard answer is, oh, it's because Paul wants to emphasize Jesus is still risen. He was risen in the past, and he's still our risen Lord. Yeah, that's exactly right. But that's not why the perfect tense form is used. What is it doing here? Well, this tends to stick out. In other words, this is what Paul is actually... This is what Paul will emphasize in the rest of the discourse. The resurrection of Jesus Christ and the resurrection of his followers. So it's emphasizing, it's making prominent and drawing attention to the main theme. So these are serving background purpose. Yeah, it's important. He died, he was buried, and he was seen. That's all important. But what Paul wants to emphasize is, out of these things, is his resurrection. He could have used the aorist tense here. But by using the perfect tense, this one sticks out because it is the main theme of the rest of the chapter. And it's interesting, whenever Jesus' resurrection is referred to in the rest of 1 Corinthians 15, it's always in the perfect tense form. So, again, there's a reason why, not because Paul wants to emphasize that Jesus is still risen. Though that's true, and you see that in chapter 15, it's just that's not why he's chosen the perfect. The perfect tense form is chosen because it draws attention to and foregrounds the most prominent feature, which is the resurrection, which is signals the main topic that Paul's going to unpack and develop in the rest of chapter 15. Now that leaves us with one more tense form, and that is the future. Now, just a couple things to say about the future. First of all, most would agree that the future tense is not like all the other tense forms. So the aorist, present, imperfect, perfect, pluperfect, the future tense is not exactly like them. In fact, there's a lot of debate as far as where the future tense comes from. Some say it is most closely related to the subjunctive mood. Some would see it as a true tense form. It's a true tense, future time. But one grammar said that any statement about the future tense as far as where it came from must be less treated as less than ironclad. And another grammarian said the future tense is an anomaly in the Greek verb tense system. That is, the future tense doesn't seem to develop all its endings like the other tense forms do across the different moods. For example, you don't find a future subjunctive. You find a present subjunctive, aorist subjunctive, but you don't find a future subjunctive. So there's debate as to exactly where it comes from, but most would agree it doesn't fit easily with the other aspects. That is, it doesn't appear to be a true aspect. Instead, the way I'm going to treat it is it's a form that doesn't indicate aspect, but indicates expectation. That is, action that can be expected to take place. And usually this does mean future action. Not all the time. There's a few examples of the future that aren't necessarily referring to some action in the future, but that's its normal usage. the future tense used of action that can be expected to take place translates easily into future time action. From the perspective of the author or from the perspective of the writer, action that will take place in the future. And you see, you can see all kinds of examples of this in the New Testament. I'm looking at one in Revelation chapter 21 and verse 9. Where John says, "And one of the seven angels who were holding the seven bowls full of the seven plagues, the seven last plagues, spoke with me, saying, 'Come, I will show to you,'" deixo, the future deixo, "I will show to you," and then he tells him what he's going to show to him, "the bride, the wife of the Lamb." So here clearly this is indicating action that can be expected to take place. From the standpoint of the angel speaking, he's referring to something that's going to take place very shortly, but it's still future in time. So when you see the future tense, think in terms of action that can be expected to take place. Often the future tense will be used of to indicate action that is more foregrounded or thematic, like the present tense. We'll see later on that although it does have similarities with the subjunctive, the future tense seems to be more semantically weighty when it's used in context where the subjunctive could have been used, for example. So future tense, the best way to see it is not to treat it like one of the aspects, although related to it, but to kind of see it as slightly separate from them, as part of the verb system, but instead of indicating aspect, indicating action that can be expected to take place. So that's a little bit more detailed description of the different aspects and what they mean, what they can do, and a couple examples of each of them from the Greek New Testament.
This is Dr. David Mathewson in his teaching on New Testament Greek, third semester. This is session number 8, Verbal Aspect.